Okay, thanks guys. Thanks for inviting me. The work I'm going to show today was mostly conducted by Ziv. The pointer is this one. By Ziv. And if I have a couple of minutes at the end, I'll show just pieces from another work. And basically, you know those figures. Actually, Irka showed this figure a minute ago. And we know those classic figures. But actually, the only thing that is realistic in this figure is maybe this onion that looks like the irrigation. Everything else is just an approximation that works best if the soil is more or less homogeneous and if everything works perfect. So in reality, it's not really this case. So we're trying to use some other approach in order to see what's really going on in the subsurface and especially our under-drip irrigation. And our approach is to use geophysics, or what we call hydrogeophysics. And we use hydrogeophysics mostly because we do not really see what's going on under the surface. And whatever sensor we put under the surface is actually destroying or disturbing the process that we're actually trying to measure. So we're trying to avoid that as much as we can. So again, our world is heterogeneous. And many people would go into stochastics, but of course I don't like it, so I'll just keep that. So hydrogeophysics in general, there's a wide variety of methods. And I'll try to, for those of you who don't really know it, just highlight some of the advantages. If you look at the TDR represented here, this plot is showing spatial and temporal scale of different measurements. If you look at the TDR, it's something of the order. It says here 1 meter. It's actually way, way below 1 meter. And the temporal scale is really large because you can just take more and more measurements as much as you can. But the spatial extent of a single measurement is really, really small, and we want to get something that will give us something better than that. And of course, there are many, many choices, including satellites that can give you something that maybe is of extreme scale in space, but the satellite passes nearby only once in a few days. And we chose to work with resistivity methods that give you some sort of a combination of wider spatial extent, but then maybe at some extent with the slightly higher time resolution. Sorry, somewhat lower time resolution. Realistically, that's the only thing that works, of course, but we pretend to do more or less the same. So hydrogeophysics is really trying to figure out something that is related to water, to the hydro, using some other physical property, and in this specific case, we're going to mostly work with the electrical conductivity of the soil. So we have 3.5 different electrical methods. We're going to talk mostly about DC resistivity, but there's also the induced polarization, the self and streaming potentials that are somewhat similar, the last two. Generally speaking, what we do is inject a square wave of current into the ground using two current electrodes and measure the induced potential induced potential is looking at the transient period here or here, and DC resistivity is really looking at the steady state condition of the electrical field in the soil. So that's the general idea. And we started to do that, people started to do that somewhere in the mid-80s, I think. And we started to apply electrical resistivity tomography in drip irrigated orchards about 6 or 7 years ago. And this is something that we got by a student of mine called Ali Tsur, an image of the electrical resistivity, in this case of the field, about 10 meters in this case deep, about 50 meters wide, and all this just with electrodes sitting on the ground. And we later on translate that into water content distribution. So everything looks great, but we were not really happy. You can see here that you have very relatively high water content near the root zone where it's irrigated. The farmer is probably doing good job, so there's not much leaching under the trees. There's somewhat plenty of water in between the trees. We think it's actually due to surplus rainwater that just falls in between the trees. But we actually show that it's also some leaching of water from the root zone towards this area. But again, we weren't really happy, and it's mostly because we got sometimes non-realistic values translating into water content, and we got temporal dynamics that we were not really happy with, so we decided to continue a little bit with this effort. And I'll try to show in a couple of slides why we were not really happy with it. So the objective was really to evaluate water fluxes and water and wetting patterns in the subsurface and try to estimate groundwater recharge using this method, recharge of both water but also salt loads that are going down to groundwater. And kind of a secondary objective was to do something about salinity that was not really taken into account in the first experiment or in the first stage of this research. So what we did is established four different stations along the Israeli coastal plain with somewhat different climatic conditions. It's everything is of course Mediterranean climate, but up here you get something like 550 millimeters of rain during the winter only, and down here you get something like 150 millimeters of rain, and of course somewhat higher evaporation here, somewhat lower, but for most of you still extreme evaporation up north here. What we did is just placed a line of 96 electrodes. We buried them under the surface, but that's not something that is required by the method. It's just in order to allow the farmer to work in the field. So we just lined a line of electrodes all around and started to take measurements roughly once a month over a year. We ran some calibration of the what we call petrophysical relations. This is everything in this field is based on Archie's equation. That's some extension of Archie's equation. It basically relates the electrical conductivity, in this case of the subsurface, the bulk conductivity, to the saturation raised to some power, the porosity raised to some other power, and the pore water electrical conductivity. And there's another term that is relevant mostly if you have a high enough clay content. And we did some calibration of this function using samples brought from the field into the lab, and we did some calibration using individual measurements taken at the field, which has some advantage, and got a relatively nice calibration curve. And this is more or less what we got in terms of electrical conductivity in this case, in log scale. And you can see, by the way, this is for one of the northern stations. It's a lemon orchard irrigated with drip irrigation over sandy soil. And you can see something that looks like a perched layer of water. The farmer, when we approached the site, told us that it's fully sandy soil to very deep subsurface, to the very deep down into the ground. We found something that looks like somewhat perched layer of water and some variability near the surface. And let's zoom in a little bit, and we'll see maybe just closer what we see. So again, this is this perched layer. Later on, we had some geoprobe drilling and found out that it's everything in sand, but there are something like 5% more clayish material here, which is enough to sustain this wetter layer. And the farmer is irrigated in this case with two drip lines in the two sides of the tree. And you can actually see something that maybe resembles some leaching of salts into this region in between. And of course, the soil is much drier in between the trees, so everything makes sense. The point where it doesn't make sense is when you start looking at the temporal variation of the water content or of the electrical resistivity. What we did is using the same plot, but we have now 12 of those. We just took a cross section along this line, just underneath the tree. And what we see here is the electrical conductivity in the summer. But then when you start moving into the winter, the electrical conductivity goes down and up again when you approach the summer again, which doesn't make sense because you have rainfall. Rainfall should generally wet the soil, not dry the soil. This is underneath the tree. We have similar condition in between the trees, similar profiles in between the trees. So this is when we realized that salinity has to play with it. And we came to some sort of a hypothesis that actually the rain that is coming is washing the salts down. So even though the soil is wetter, it's less saline during the winter, and this is why we get this reduction of the electrical conductivity. Now, someone said that he's the only engineer. He's not the only engineer. We're engineers too. So we decided to go solve this problem with some mathematical tools. And the main thing is that if you remember this Archie's solution type, most people typically assume that the electrical conductivity of the pore water is the same. It doesn't change neither in space, neither in time. Laura Beth wrote it specifically, but when you analyze practically almost every ERT paper, they all do the same. They just assume that the salinity, the pore water salinity, is homogeneous both in space and in time. So what we decided to do is to use a numerical model to simulate water flow and solute transport. Irka, sorry. Irka is here or he's gone? That's not Hydros. We did it with COMSOL, coupled with MATLAB, in order to do the inversion of that. So we solved Richard's equation, including Van Genuchten equation, Van Genuchten-Wallin equation. But instead of solute transport, what we do is use artificial solute, which is the pore water electrical conductivity. And we solved that, and we coupled that with some genetic algorithm that will help us calibrate the model. And at the bottom line, what we get is this. These are the original plots that we had before, electrical conductivity as a function for different times. But now we can decouple the water content and the pore water electrical conductivity. So what we can see now is that the pore water, at least in that cross-section, is now more homogeneous. It doesn't really change much in time, which makes sense because the farmer wants the plant to be wet at all times. But we see really different changes in the salinity, in the pore water salinity, where salinity is washed or salts are washed down in the winter and recover again in the summer. Of course, once we did that, we can more correctly analyze the flow path and the dynamics of the water content, which makes us really happy. We can also go one step further and look at generation of recharge and see that in our case, specifically, most of the recharge actually is related to a couple of major rain events during the winter and maybe just light recharge occurring during the summer from leach of water. I'm going to skip this one. That's another experiment, but just go to the last slide of it. This is another attempt to calibrate in a totally different conditions, looking now at much, much smaller scale, at a root zone of an individual bell pepper plant. And what we get here is, again, due to the salinity, that we actually need to calibrate individual petrophysical relations for every depth of the soil, because the salinity differs with depth, because the root uptake is differential. It's not homogeneous throughout the verde zone. So just to conclude, Obama is probably on the way out, but ERT, yes, we can. We can use the ERT to understand something about the spatial patterns of water in the root zone, of water and salt in the root zone. And especially in our region that is really with extreme evaporation and high salinity, we really need to take care at salinity while using ERT. And if there's some time, I'll be happy to answer questions.